Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. The left understands that they are at war with us. It's time that we get on the same page. They're attacking from every direction, not just literally, physically going out and trying to kill right-wingers, and in some cases, succeeding. But obviously, in the political front, the information warfare front, they are moving forward at speed while we become more and more frustrated with the lack of action from the so-called leaders in our on our side of things. And projecting this outward, I really have a not very bright outlook, and we'll get into that this hour, about the way the American government and politicians are going to respond to this in the worst way ever. But I want to first go to this video. This is from a friend of the show, Carlin Borashenko, and we're going to have her on later this week, hopefully, to expand on this. As we know, the left is planning a massive nationwide total permanent strike on May 1st, 2028. They're gearing up and getting ready for this because they want to shut down the entire economy in order to hold the U.S. hostage until we meet their demands. Here's Carlin Borashenko showing some frustration that nobody else is taking this seriously. Let's watch.
2.5 years from now, when the left shuts down the entire economy on May 1st, 2028, none of these people are going to see it coming. Oh, this has no cultural relevance to us. Donald Trump really took care of that woke problem. The left is going to shut down the economy completely in 2.5 years, and they're going to do practice runs leading up to that, organizing across every union. I know this because I've been in the organizing calls where they've been talking about it, and they've been talking about it for about a year now. They're literally holding schools all over the country to help people organize a strike. It's May 1st, 2028. That is the mass general strike they've been talking about for years. And no one is aware of this because no one listens to the left except for me and my community. May 2026 is one of the practice runs, but it's not going to be the only practice run. It's just the soonest one probably coming up. But May 1st, 2026 is not going to be the big one. The big one is going to be on May 1st, 2028, which is when all of the unions have negotiated to have their contracts expired at exactly the same time. That is the big one. And the reason, and this is led by the United Auto Workers, the reason that they all negotiated to have their contracts end on May 1st, 2028 is to do a mass general strike to shut down the economy. And none of these people are going to see this coming. They're going to be like, oh, the left is doing some stupid protesting thing. They're going to ignore all the practice runs that the left is doing. They're going to ignore all the organizing calls that the left is doing. The left is not secretive about this. They literally do conference presentations about this strategy. They are literally coordinating across all the major labor unions on this strategy. They are not covert about it at all. And no one on the right has any idea that this is coming. And when it does happen, every single one of these people is going to be caught off guard. Oh, all of a sudden, the left has become a cultural problem for us because now it's beyond memes on Twitter. Now they've literally shut down the entire economy to include the supermarkets, to include the airlines, to include the auto workers, to include Amazon, to include every major, to include the K-12 public schools through all of the teachers' unions. But because Richard doesn't have Antifa showing up at his door like he did in 2016, he thinks nothing is happening and Trump has totally solved the problem. And Nick just goes along with it. Yeah, you're so right. Okay. All right, fine, whatever. At least I'll be prepared and my community will be prepared and we're going to know what the fuck is going on and no one else is going to know what the fuck is going on because everyone only wants clickbait outrage bullshit on Twitter and that's all people fucking care about or whatever memes people are posting.
Yeah, powerful stuff. We should probably be aware of this and we should probably stop it before it creates another communist revolution like Germany 1918, exactly what they're planning.
I am making this historic announcement on Friday, December 12, 2025. The future of InfoWars hangs in the balance. It is in your hands. They're having a state auction in January next year in about a month. But we don't even have the money for payroll or for satellites or for bandwidth. We've got this next shot to survive. But if we don't get the funds in, we shut down. So we're selling three emergency limited edition posters at InfoWarsStore.com right now that are critical to us staying on the air. I want to encourage you to go now to get I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones poster, and two others, Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West, Iconic Crusades. Go now to InfoWarsStore.com to get one or more of these iconic posters, limited edition. We cannot do it without you. I have fired the bat signal. Take action now if you want to stand with us in this fight at InfoWarsStore.com, and I salute you for your support.
You're tuned into The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
All right, welcome back, folks. A lot of various threads coming together this weekend. We've got the various attacks, whether it's in Australia or here in America, Brown University or Bondi Beach. Then you also have more stories of just completely random violence that itself seems to be just the consequence or symptom of our ever less solidified national identity. Some really horrific stuff. Plus just the sheer incompetence of it all. As we're getting conflicting stories about the shooter in Brown and videos that you couldn't possibly, you know, recognize. And then there's this weird thing where, yeah, I wouldn't even trust the authorities to tell us what they know if they knew it. Like, I can't tell if they know things and they're just withholding it because they want to portray a certain narrative, or whether they don't even know. Like in the Brown University case, the shooter busts into this lecture hall and shouts something. Now, it hasn't been officially reported what he shouted, at least not that I could find. Seems like they probably know. Why wouldn't they tell us what he shouted? Like, did he shout Allahu Akbar? Is that what it is? Did he shout something? I mean, it might be useful to know this, especially as we haven't found him yet. I mean, it might help to guide the search, might help certain communities know whether he might be a part of their population or not, but that's all being withheld. Why? Why are they withholding whatever it is? We don't know what he yelled. Was this a targeted attack because Ella Cook was a prominent right winger? That's what a lot of people are suggesting. In fact, let's go to this is Mark Halpern, clip number 17, about the rumors going around about what may have been the impetus for the shooting in Brown University. Let's watch.
People are telling me that the family of I just need to look up her name. I apologize.
Ella Cook, I think.
Thank you.
Mark.
Thank
Ella,
you.
Yeah.
Thank you. That the family of Ella Cook, the Alabama young woman who was a sophomore, has been told that she was the target of what happened at Brown. I have no idea whether that's true. There's other theories about why the person did what they did, but now that we don't know who the assailant is, it's going to be harder to say. But if it's true that she was targeted, that's a big story, because she was one of the most visible conservatives on that campus. Don't know that it's true, but probably most of you don't even know that that's being alleged, because you'd have to follow certain accounts on X or have sources, as I do, who are telling me that. So, Amber, if she was targeted, and again, we don't know that, but if she were targeted, what would the implications of that be?
Well, I'll start with a couple of things that I think lend credence to that theory, which is, one, typically when we see mass school shooters, they don't just stop and walk away, right? Usually they keep going until they're apprehended by police, shot dead, or they kill themselves.
Yeah. Amber, let me just stop you.
Yep.
I should have been clear. She was the number two person at the Young Republicans branch on Brown's campus. So that's why some people are concerned if she were targeted. Go ahead, Amber. I apologize.
Right. Well, and the other thing is, if the police are telling Brown students that they are safe, they don't have to shelter in place anymore, but they don't have a suspect in custody, I think that also suggest that this was some kind of targeted attack. Sadly, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, when I was on campus at Georgetown, I was chair of the College Republicans. I had to report multiple threats against me in my final 2 years on campus.
So basically, nothing is ever done when the right wing is the subject of threats. Nothing is ever done when they're even subject of violence. It's treated as a one-off, you know, singular explosion of mental illness that we just have to be sad about and move on. And again, it's a pattern that is becoming a little bit ridiculous, especially when it's just like over and over and over again, it's the right wing being targeted. And over and over and over again, what we're told the biggest concern now is, you know, the threat of right-wing retaliation. It's like, I wish the right wing retaliated. I wish. I mean, maybe that would then justify your concern. But so far, no, the concern should be for the groups of people that are doing the murdering, not the ones being murdered. And again, it gets bizarre and becomes so apparent how just nonsensical any of this is when there's an attack against any other group of people. I mean, if that's how we're supposed to treat things, then right now, everything out of Australia should be, you know, concerns about, you know, the Jewish community retaliating. There should be, you know, a lot of concern, maybe some extra couple million dollars in security cash for Muslims in Australia right now. But it doesn't really work that way, does it? It never actually seems to work that way. In fact, I think user Kittler on X at Kittler512 just put it very simply. When they attack white people, it's don't look back in anger. When they attack Jews, it's we need laws to protect the Jewish community. You know, maybe, I mean, I would rather it's just always that second option, right? I'm not actually mad at the Jewish community for wanting to protect itself. It's the discrepancy that's so infuriating. And of course, we saw this on just perfect display in the UK when there was an attack on the synagogue there a few months ago. And Keir Starmer comes out and is just immediately like, we stand with the Jewish community. You must feel safe here. We will stop anybody who's, you know, going to do this to you. We're beefing security around synagogues and Jewish schools. And it's like, okay, but when it's a white person attacked, it's we can't let hate spread. We can't let this rising tide of national, you know, white nationalism take us over. We have to crush any, you know, like parents, community members that are upset that their daughters were just slaughtered in cold blood by a foreigner that their country welcomed in here. They're the bad ones. They're the ones that have to be crushed. And it's so obvious now. I'm not sure how they're going to keep playing this. Like they can't keep doing this. People get it now, I think. More and more people are coming to understand what we of InfoWars has been explaining forever. You have to be able to see this stuff with your own eyes. They're not going to tell you. Oh, yeah, here's the video. Oh, do you recognize him? Anybody recognize this guy? There he is. He's got two legs. If you know a human being with two legs, go ahead and give Brown University a call. You might know this guy. So let's go to clip number five here. Because again, like I said at the beginning of the show, the attack on Australia, the only lesson it should really be teaching us is that everything that they promised us would bring security was a lie. All of their policies aimed at crushing violence completely miss the actual violent people that will actually do the violence, but don't think for a single second that that will make anybody in Australia, at least not in the systems of power, rethink the supposed solutions they'd applied to violence in their communities 2-3 decades ago. Let's go to clip number five here.
Here's what happens next.
Recall the parliament and undertake to do exactly that.
the legislation that's been written to deal with this problem. It's being sent out to federal politicians and state politicians across the country right now. Some of them have already had it sitting in their inbox for weeks, maybe months. That legislation was written a long time ago, sitting there waiting for the right event. In 1996, after the Port Arthur massacre, the toughest legislation in the world for firearm ownership was passed through the Howard government. It had bipartisan support and John was considered a hero. Most legal and law-abiding firearms owners will tell you that it was draconian. And Australia was never the same again after that. This Bondi event is absolutely horrific and my heart is broken for my country today. Everyone knows that this is a turning point in Australia's history. For you millennials and Zoomers that have never been through something like this, those of us in Gen X, that remember this from 1996 can tell you exactly what happens. Things don't get better for you. Things will get worse for you. There will be crackdowns like you've never seen before, and then it will extend and graduate into right-wing politics, and you will all be the enemy. I'm going to give you guys a heads up right now. You all need to tread really carefully, because anything you post, anything you say, you will be in the firing line. Not literally, but you will be in the firing line and targeted by federal authorities going forward. This couldn't have happened at a worse time either. This will impact everything. And not only that, but over the Christmas break, while people are distracted, the emergency legislation will be passed.
And I give this undertaking to the Australian people. We will do whatever it takes to force the strongest possible action from governments.
Australia, you don't have a dog in this fight. This is Australia first and only first. There is no other culture, there is no religion, there is nothing that is important to you here other than Australia first. And if anything comes down the barrel that isn't Australia first, you know who's pulling the strings behind that. We all know. You can't hide what comes next. It's written plain as day. We've seen it play out around the world in multiple places. This is what happens. The legislation is already written. And that's the part that scares me the most about all of this. Australia first until I die.
They'd already written the legislation. They'd been waiting for an excuse to crack down on free speech. And of course, that's exactly what they're doing. And we have Australian politicians already saying, you know, the real solution here to this problem is cracking down on right-wing activity, right-wingers. The people trying to keep Australia Australian are the ones who are now going to be cracked down on because they didn't listen to them. And now 10 people have been slaughtered in cold blood, including a 10-year-old girl. I mean, what are you supposed to do? I mean, what is it going to take before people realize that this whole multicultural adventure that they've sent us on was always a lie? This is always going to be the outcome. And Australia's getting it worse than just about everybody else. And I mean, then we get into what's happening in Syria right now, where it's like, why does ISIS still even exist? Apparently, ISIS is taking credit for the shooting in Australia. So you've got an ISIS attack in Syria, where they kill two members of the National Guard, which shouldn't even be in the Middle East anyway. Nobody from America should be, but least of all the National Guard members, whose entire purpose is protecting the homeland. That's ridiculous. You would think that our successful overthrow of Bashar al-Assad after 15 years of continuous war in that country would have had some positive dividends, which would mean that we either wouldn't have to have people stationed in Syria, or they would at least be safer than they were previously, but now they're less safe. Because ISIS was always against the Syrian regime. This is what doesn't make any sense. Al-Jolani, who's leading Syria, was an ISIS commander. He was Al-Qaeda and ISIS, and ISIS was always created by the American government. I mean, Trump said it during his first campaign. ISIS was created by Obama and Hillary, and it was. It was an offshoot of the CIA training moderate rebels. It's not a coincidence that ISIS battalions suddenly appeared in the desert just outside of CIA training camps, right where the moderate rebels were being armed. So America creates ISIS to overthrow Assad, and that's what it was about. and to take down Hezbollah. They resisted for 15 years. Finally, in the midst of this, you know, massive conflict with Iran and Israel, Assad's overthrown in 2 weeks because of this marauding, you know, battalion of barbarians out of Turkey led by Jolani, the Al-Qaeda Syria beheader-in-chief. He gets into Syria, is feted around the world as he's carrying out ethnic cleansing operations against the Druze and Christian sects that were protected under the Alawite administration of Bashar al-Assad. Meanwhile, Israel is taking, you know, chunks of Syria to the south. And the force that we created to take out Assad, the leader of which is now president of Syria, is now killing National Guardsmen and resurging, and also taking credit for an attack on Jews in Australia that Israel is blaming on Iran, even though Iran is Shia, not Sunni, not allied with ISIS. ISIS, who almost exclusively attacks other non-fundamentalist Muslim people, but have never attacked Israel or American, you know, forces to any degree. Something's not adding up here. Do you understand what I'm saying? That something's not adding up here? That not is all, not is as it seems? Like, this is a very complicated, multifaceted crystal of deception, but it's all deception. I'm not exactly sure what's coming from where. There have been reports, I don't know how credible they are, that the shooter in Australia may have, in fact, fought for the IDF at some point. But it's the type of thing that it's like, it sounds like an outrageous claim. Sound like it'd be a ridiculous oversight if you're trying to plant a false flag. Maybe don't use the guy who's, you know, in your uniform. But on the other hand, if it was true, I'm not surprised it's scrubbed from the internet. I mean, when you see the lengths to which the authorities in America, in cooperation with the people who run big tech, Google, Facebook, all of it, and the vested interest they have in protecting Israel in particular, if it was the case, like, why would we, how would we ever find out? It's not on Google. I mean, if you search the shooter's name, IDF, on Google, what you get is the, gee, results are changing quickly. We don't really know what's happening, so we're not going to give you any information. But, you know, it's kind of like the Charlie Kirk thing. It's kind of like all this stuff. It's like, well, I can have hunches about who I think did it, but I know that if I'm right, then we'll never have the evidence. It will never exist. The control mechanisms are too tight. The evidence of Mossad's participation in something will never come to light. It'll either be stopped by Mossad themselves or the intelligence networks here in America that take orders from Mossad, or it'll be stopped by somebody in big tech who's cooperating with the mafia that's organizing all of this, or it'll be, you know, shut down by the editor of the newsroom who decides that this story is a little too hot to handle, or maybe they're, you know, worried that it'll stop the big, you know, royal interview of Prince Harry, you know, right? I mean, this is how it works. This information will never come to light. So I never expect it to come to light. So I can't prove any of my suppositions, but perhaps this is a situation where the absence of evidence is in fact evidence. That's sort of the world that we're in now. It's confusing, but that's just how it works. That's just where we're at. We can go to clip 27 here. The audio is not great, but this is Trump addressing this ISIS attack on U.S. forces in Syria. Again, apologies for the poor audio, but this is, as far as I can tell, the only statement he's made about it since the news broke. Let's watch.
So we mourn the loss of three great patriots in Syria. You know how it happened. It was an ambush, terrible. We also have three wounded that seem to be doing pretty well. But we mourn the loss. These are great, three great people. And it's just a terrible thing. Syria, by the way, was fighting along with us. The president, the new president of Syria is, as they told me, and I'm not surprised, he's devastated by what happened. This was an ISIS attack on us and Syria. And again, we mourn the loss and we pray for them and their parents and their loved ones. Very, very sad.
Mr. President, will the U.S. retaliate against ISIS?
Yeah, we will.
And will the U.S. forces are attacked again?
We're going to be seeing.
And does the U.S. still be in?
We will retaliate. Thank you very much.
All right, so that's Trump saying they'll retaliate against ISIS. I don't know. ISIS has always been kind of an Orwellian creation. Same thing with Al-Qaeda. You know, Al-Qaeda just means the database, right? It was a designation given by the CIA. Like, there was no group out there saying, we are the database. It was, there was a bunch of people they designated as terrorists, had them in a database. They called it Al-Qaeda. So, I mean, same kind of thing with ISIS. It's like, well, what even is this? Where did it come from? Who funds it? Is this just now a permanent boogeyman that can constantly be, you know, reinvigorated? Because it's not like they have any, like, real charismatic leaders. You can kind of say anybody's ISIS. Anybody can say they're ISIS. You can kind of just arm a bunch of Syrians, say you're now an ISIS, even though it's just CIA, you know, Saudi Arabian trained operators. Like, what even is ISIS at this point? And why did it carry out two deadly attacks this weekend all of a sudden? Is this real? Is this real? Is this really a thing? Apparently the shooter in Australia, father and son shooters, had a ISIS flag in their car. If you, as Australia, have the tightest controls in the Western world, what Anglosphere, when it comes to communications and the internet and everything, if you have the tightest gun control and everything and you're not able to stop this, what do you have it for? What is the point of any of it? So I'm suspicious of all of this, and I'm worried about where it goes and what the catastrophes are going to permit the authorities to justify. As we know, the number one tool of the enemy, and it hasn't changed, and it seems like it's only gotten more aggressive, is problem, reaction, solution, creating crises to then present the solutions to this. And it seems like it's just on overdrive at this point. The crises are coming more and more rapidly and with more and more extremity. And yet, nobody seems to be doing anything to actually get to the root of the problem. Everybody uses every excuse possible to try to crush any nativist populist uprising or white people actually trying to defend themselves. It's pretty horrific. Tonight at midnight, folks, is your last chance to get 40% off every single product on thealexjonesstore.com. Tonight at midnight, December 15th, it ends. So make sure to order, you place your orders by tonight in order to receive them by Christmas. So if you want to do your Christmas shopping, go today to thealexjonesstore.com. Keep us on the air in the fight and trying to, honest and highly informed way, navigate the dangerous waters of globalist machinations. We'll be right back.
I have not yet begun to fight. That's what the founder of the U.S. Navy, John Paul Jones, said back in 1779. And that's exactly where we are right now. You see this bad boy right here? That is a limited edition original InfoWars poster. We got about 1,000 that are unsigned, 500 that are signed, and that's it. And it is the final Hail Mary to keep InfoWars on the air. We've sold out of almost every product at InfoWarsStore.com. We had the bankruptcy, they won't let us order new products, but we were able to get this produced. This is an emergency fundraiser. It's myself, actual screenshot from the show, with a 357 Magnum aimed at the globalist, the truth gun, with John Paul Jones, the founder of the U.S. Navy, saying, I have not yet begun to fight. And 1997 to 2026, how long InfoWars survived? Hopefully we go past that. With my signature. This is a limited edition poster, signed or unsigned. It goes to keep us on the air. They're going to have an auction. They're saying in January. They already had a federal auction that was rigged and fake, and the judge shut it down. This is a state auction. Good guys are going to try to buy InfoWars. We'll stay on air as InfoWars if they're successful. If they're not, we move on to the Alex Jones Network. But regardless, if we don't have funds coming in December and January, there won't be money for payroll, there won't be money for the bandwidth or the servers or the satellites. So it's absolutely essential you get this. And if we get shut down, you have a memento of the final resistance at InfoWars that is so historic to hang on your wall. And there's not just this poster. We've made 1,000 of these two other posters that I designed as well. One says, Defend the West, 1997-2026, InfoWars, with the archetypal Knight of the West standing against the globalist. There's another, Make No Peace with Evil, with another Knight of the Crusades standing with the cross in his hand against the globalist tyranny. Both are powerful posters as well. These are limited edition. You can get signed copies if you really want to support us, or just get the regular posters as well if you want to support us. But all three of these posters are limited edition right now, exclusively available at InfoWarsStore.com. This is historic. We've come so far together. The deep state spent hundreds of millions of dollars trying to shut us down. We still got a chance to win. But if we don't have the funds coming in December and January, we will shut down. So I want to thank you all for your past support. I want to encourage you now to go to InfoWarsStore.com, where everything else is sold out and there's no more funds to buy more stuff to keep us on the air. And just by attrition, they will win and shut us down by not having money for payroll if you don't decide to bail out this organization that has had incredible results against the tyrants and has stood for you and your family and all of us collectively. So take action now and get the iconic limited edition I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones, Alex Jones poster, and Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West posters, limited edition, and know historically you stood with the tip of the spear at the key part of this fight, and we never gave up, and we never surrendered, and we stood and fought on our feet instead of groveling on our knees as slaves. Thank you so much. I fired the bat signal. Thank you for all your past support, but now is the critical time to take action at InfoWarsStore.com for these three limited edition iconic posters. The ball's in your court. Take action now at InfoWarsStore.com. It's now up to you.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. I'm going to open up the phone lines for your calls for the second half of the show today. And I usually just like taking calls about sort of anything and everything. So I know, I mean, I've got my mind on certain things, but I know that the audience probably has their mind on a lot of other stuff that we might not even be aware of. But I think I have a question that you might help me answer. I want to take calls on the questions, have we wasted the last 10 years? Or has this been an overall positive? It's been about 10 years since Trump came down the golden escalator. And it seems to me like at that point, going through the 2016 presidential election, it's like everybody was on board. It's like at that point, it was such a golden opportunity with Donald Trump blasting down the sort of controlled two-party system, defeating the Bushes and the Clintons, being ushered into office totally unexpectedly on this populist message. He had all of the political cachet he could ask for and all of the proof he could ever need to dismantle the deep state. Here we are 10 years later. None of the people that we knew in 2016 were committing crimes in the deep state have been arrested. Populism has swept over the globe in a very powerful way. The example of Trump has been a potent one for populist leaders around the world. But what now? But where do we go from here? But what has actually been accomplished? That's my question. Have we wasted the last, has it been a waste? When the revelations of Peter Strzok and James Comey and Hillary Clinton, I mean, it was Pizzagate and satanic, you know, spirit cooking. And I mean, it all came out in 2016. And it seems like since then, it's just been more and more and more insane plots by the very same people. We keep catching them, we keep exposing it, and then nothing happens. So where do we go from here? So I'll give out the number. The number to dial is 1-877-789-2539, 1-877-789-2539. Because you've got stuff like this from Mark Mitchell, Rasmussen Reports. He's commenting on a new poll from NBC News. The poll from NBC News says support for MAGA among Republicans is rapidly declining. Mark Mitchell's response is every Republican in D.C. will misinterpret this. And you know exactly what he means, right? We understand why support for MAGA is rapidly declining because it has failed. It is failing as we speak. It has absolutely nothing to do with people, you know, MAGA people becoming more left-wing. Literally the opposite. That's not how people in the Republican Party are going to interpret this. People in the Republican Party are going to interpret this as the storm is almost over. They'll have blue skies again in no time. The incredibly annoying idea of right-wingers who want things done, that the American people could have demands, and you know, President Trump is giving people this illusion that the Republican Party could, if they wanted, actually do something. They are so eager for that to go away. They're so eager for the Bushes to come rushing back to the party, for people to see President Trump as this example of, like, yeah, that's why populism doesn't work. It's stupid. It just causes a bunch of problems. Let's just go back to the way we were before. Bunch of Republican quislings tapping the brakes as we careen headlong off the progressive cliff. So what happens after Trump? We had this brilliant golden opportunity with Trump as this paradigm-destroying, mold-breaking dynamo of American politics. And it seems like he has been consumed by the swamp. It seems like he's now actively participating in the swamp madness. And it seems like the Republicans are doing everything they can to guarantee that nobody like Trump will ever rise again. So what is the purpose of the awakening? What is the purpose of the populist uprising if we just revert back to the status quo? It's almost worse than if it had never happened. Every politician in D.C., I think he's exactly right, will misinterpret the disappointment with MAGA, and they'll act on that, and they'll run a bunch of milquetoast, lukewarm Republicans who will apologize for Trump's positions, thinking that this is going to play well in the polls because they're just that delusional. Their worldview is just that inverted. And then the Republicans will lose outright, completely. They'll continue to blame it on Trump. And the Democrats will take power and just go absolutely nuts. So we'll talk about that as the crew lines up calls. But I do want to talk about Europe. So before we get into Europe, just as a final thought when it comes to Trump and, you know, what the hell's going on here. We have this story from Fugitive Caesar. Something like 72% of STEM graduates can't find a STEM job this week. But this week, we're cutting deals with Indian CEOs at IBM to bring in more Indian tech workers. So there's Trump sitting next to this character, this Indian guy, as we cut more deals to sell out the American birthright to India, as Amazon sends $35 billion over there to train their people, and Microsoft sends $17.5 billion into India to train their people. We get nothing. We get absolutely nothing. And the guy that he's talking to is the very same CEO that was caught on a leaked Zoom call telling IBM senior management that they are to be hiring no white guys, regardless of qualifications, for any position in any of their divisions. This person goes on to say of Trump, this dumb boomer deserves to lose. I bet he doesn't look so tough in his next mugshot. I don't think he deserves to lose. I don't want him in any way to fail in the mission that we have given him. But I can't help but agree. So this is the IBM CEO. Let's go to clip number 12 here. This is Trump sounding off on what has been done to white people over the last couple of years. Let's watch.
This video that was leaked to O'Keefe of Krishna, the CEO of IBM, telling his employees to hire fewer white men or they will be punished. Their pay will be cut. Watch this.
Yeah, I'm very clear about this. I expect at the executive level, so that is not just my direct, but all executives in the company have to move forward by 1% on both underrepresented minorities. But let me say it, Asians in the U.S. are not an underrepresented minority in a tech company. However, others are. Ditto on gender diversity. So we take underrepresented and gender. You got to move both forward by a percentage. That leads to a plus on your bonus. By the way, if you lose, you lose part of your bonus.
How did an immigrant to this country wind up supporting racial fascism? It's a great question, and one that we should think deeply about as tens of millions of new immigrants pour across our.
So there you go. That's the IBM chief saying that, you know, you would have your bonuses withheld if you dared to hire a white guy or an Asian person for that matter. You would get bonuses for diversifying the people beneath you. In other words, everybody except for straight white Christian guys. And that guy is sitting next to Trump making a deal, despite the fact that 72% of STEM graduates cannot find a job in America with their degree. Isn't that something else? Compact Magazine's come out with a huge story on this, The Lost Generation, basically talking about how white people have just been deliberately excluded from absolutely everything. And he makes a great point in saying that, you know, they decided around 2014, 15, 16, that, you know, they needed to diversify the corporate world. But they didn't start off with firing the old boomers that were there. They just stopped hiring young white people. So while it would still be despicable, I'd still be against it, it at least would make some sense to be like, okay, this industry is too white male. Let's get rid of some of the people that have been here for 40 or 50 years. Still despicable, don't get me wrong. Less despicable than the old boomers themselves who have been in the industry 40 or 50 years saying, yeah, from now on, I mean, I still need my job because I'm going to diversify. I'm going to stop hiring the young white guys. I'm going to limit the ability of young people to replicate my success and my jaunt up the career ladder. I'm going to pull the ladder up after me to stop them from being hired. And I'll do that so I can keep my cushy job as an aging boomer who now apparently has discovered how bad your own people are. It's just despicable. And we can get into some of these stats, but I do want to move on to Europe because Europe is in a kind of hilarious pickle right now where they are trying to start a war, but they have no army. They're trying to recruit their citizens who they spent the last several decades demonizing as much as humanly possible. They're trying to go to war with a country that provides their energy while simultaneously detonating with TNT every nuclear power plant they still have left on the continent. They are seemingly insane unless you understand their real motives. None of this makes any sense if you take them at their word. If instead you just understand by the power of your own observation that the goal of the European elite is in fact the eradication of the European people, then none of this is confusing at all. It actually all perfectly aligns and is the best thing for them to do right now. Let me repeat. They're insane if they think that they can fight a war with Russia. They're insane if they think they even should. And I got a lot, of videos to show you about this. But let's start with clip number 14. I almost made this joke the other day, but everybody who follows history knows this. But one of our guests, I can't remember exactly who it was talking about the age of the average soldier in Ukraine, something like 48 years old. And at the time, I'm thinking, well, as long as they're not enlisting 13-year-olds, it's not as bad as it could be. Yeah, European leaders propose multinational force and hail significant progress on Ukraine talks. Right now, they're threatening to try to crash the U.S. economy if we dare to pull out of Ukraine. They are so desperate for this war. Let's go to clip 14 here, because while, yes, the Ukraine government has been throwing 45-year-olds into vans to send them to the front line to die, they've not yet lowered their conscription age, which is the sign that you've lost, essentially. By the time the Russians were invading Germany in World War II, the German lines were staffed with 12- and 13-year-olds. And Ukraine may soon be getting there, at least they will be, if warmonger extraordinaire John Bolton has anything to say about it. Let's go to clip number 14 here. Here he is, the despicable neocon scumbag himself, John Bolton, calling for a lowering of the recruitment age in Ukraine.
I don't think so. I think Ukraine, as Great Britain during World War II, has a very good argument. You can't have elections in wartime, especially in Ukraine's case, when you've got the foreign invader occupying 20% of the country. If you're going to be fair about this, you'd have free and fair elections in Russia, too. We know that's not going to happen. So I think Ukraine needs to do more to show the fight against corruption continues. You can probably have local elections in places where the Russians aren't occupying. And I think this is advice from a friend. I think they need to lower their draft age from 25 to 18 to get more manpower on the battlefield and to make sure that the country as a whole is bearing the burden of this war equally.
Conscription age for men is 25, lowered from 27 in April 2024. Now, their good friend John Bolton is suggesting, why don't you go after the 18-year-olds? Hell, there are people that, you know, were children when the war started. They're old enough to recruit now. I mean, it's just a million Ukrainian men have died. An entire generation of Ukrainians have been wiped out. Country's population has gone down by like 50% during the war. Somebody that doesn't want to be involved has to flee. The only people left there are the people who can't afford to leave and are being, again, thrown into conscription vans to be fed into the meat grinder, or the ultra wealthy that are making hundreds of millions of dollars off American taxpayers by literally selling their own people like pieces of meat. And now John Bolton is like, what if we go after the young adults too? There's still plenty of manpower there, plenty of meat to be ground up in service of Moloch. So let's get to it. I mean, after all, the more Ukrainians die, the higher the BlackRock, Goldman Sachs profits are. The more Ukrainian men they can liquidate, the more space for African migrants there are. Okay? John Bolton knows what he's talking about. This, of course, is the absurdity of Europe. A continent that has systematically destroyed its own people, that has invited millions of hostile foreigners who carry out terrorist attacks to an insane degree, to the point where major European cities aren't even having Christmas celebrations because they know that they will be attacked by migrants and there's nothing they can do to stop it, so they just aren't having the Christmas celebrations. And then they turn around and say, you have to go die to protect your country. It's not their country. You've sold their country out. You have sold them out. You've sold their sisters out and their mothers out. And you want them to go die? Again, if you go by what they're saying, it makes no sense. If instead you understand their ultimate goal is destruction of the European people, then bringing in 10 million Muslims to rape them to death or sending them all to die on a godforsaken frozen field in Russia are in fact perfectly aligned. So there's no contradiction whatsoever, actually. And really, it's just up to whether the European people recognize this and are able to resist the propaganda. And it is just unbelievably offensive. Yeah, they aren't even doing New Year's Eve in Paris because the migrants would attack it. They have been conquered, okay? It really is so, like, crazy that out of the, something like a German government, everything that's out of them is like, German people are to be despised. They're awful. Anybody loving Germany? I mean, you remember when Angela Merkel was first chosen to lead the chancellorship. Like during her inauguration, one of her lieutenants has a German flag and she rips it out of his hand and throws it on the floor. They literally hate their own people, only to turn around and go, Germans, we need you to go fight Russia. It's so cynical. The only time they will even pretend to appreciate European people, the European race, is when they are encouraging them to go kill themselves. Whether it's posters about sterilization, the only time you'll see a white family portrayed in the media. Euthanasia, the only time you'll see white people in media. Yeah, this is it. Literally throwing the German flag on the ground, ripping it out of her lieutenant's hand, out of embarrassment, shaking her head. The German flag of the country she's supposed to represent. And then they're going to turn around and say, hey, white German people, you need to go die to protect your country. It's ballsy, I'll give them that. Let's start with Germany. Let's go to clip number 10 here. Germany really worried about their manpower problem. Yeah, AJ, I wonder why.
Despite the uptick in enlistments, the Bundeswehr faces a manpower challenge. It wants to add about 75,000 active duty troops to its all-volunteer force by 2035. History weighs on recruitment. The issue still sparks protests. A recent poll found an overwhelming majority of 15 to 25-year-olds would not take up arms. If volunteer numbers fall short, the government may reintroduce the draft. Soldiers we met in basic training told us they find the reluctance of their generation to volunteer troubling.
I think a lot of it must have to do with the history of World War II.
Yes, of course.
Private Lasse told us he's proud to serve.
Nobody wants to go to war, but if it happens, you have to be there to defend your country.
Okay, well, why don't you send some of those new Germans? Remember you made the magazines with the picture of the Afghan family and you wrote the new Germans on it? Why don't the new Germans go fight? Well, they're just as German as everybody else. How about you start with the new Germans first? After all, we can't trust these white German people. We saw last time they were allowed to, you know, fight. It got bad. It got real bad. So let's just how about all of the millions and millions of people you brought over? Because it seems like what you're asking is for all of the people in Germany and the UK and France, all of the white people that are continually abused by their own government, should now be packed up and sent off to Siberia to die in a war with Russia, while all of the Muslims that have been, you know, raping and assaulting them get to stay and basically inherit their country while the rest of them are killed. Yeah, it seems like what you're doing here. Yeah, these are the new Germans. Go get them. Go ask them. And again, just like, you know, the warning signals that America is, you know, falling out of love with MAGA, it makes the Republicans be like, oh, that's because they don't like populism. They want responsible governments again, where we talk about the budget and our country is stolen out from under us. Completely wrong interpretation. Same thing's happening here. They're like, it's because the Germans are embarrassed about World War II. It's like if Germany was Nazi, they probably wouldn't have a recruitment problem, actually. Actually, it's because of the systematic denazification of Germany that has left them literally suicidal and embarrassed of their own existence. You expect them to go defend an institution, the German state, that you have repeatedly drilled into their brains is evil? What? Why would they do that? Why would they go fight for that? And on the other hand, if you are actually a German nationalist, if you are actually proud of your heritage and your people, why would you go fight for the very government that is systematically destroying you? Duh. Let's go to clip number six here. Britain's in the same boat and just as delusional as Germany. Let's watch.
David Clouse here. So I just thought I'd make this video with the ongoing efforts of the British establishment to prepare people for war. I mean, when you first look at it, the whole concept is just ridiculous. We don't have an army, we don't really have a navy, we don't have an air force, but they're acting like we do. Second of all, do we really have an enemy? Well, I would argue our enemy sits in 10 Downing Street in the corridors of power, and the ones we don't see either, they're the ones pulling the strings for our real enemy. But they're coming up with this fantasy threat that it's Russia, and Russia's threatening Britain. So they've deployed the entire apparatus of the British state, MPs, the media, now head of MI6, they're all coming out and doing it. So the question is this just a ruse to try and get more money for the military-industrial complex, or do they mean it? And I actually think they do mean it. I think there probably will be some form of skirmish or something even worse with Russia by the 2030s or earlier. Because why would they lie about it? They said they were going to have a scamdemic, and they did. So why would they be lying about this? The key thing to remember is they're having a meltdown because they're saying people on the British right aren't patriots. They don't want to fight for their country. Well, this is a country that's been importing 1 million foreigners every year for the last 15 years plus more. 15 million years. 15 million people and the rest. And they think we're all going to go out and fight illegal immigrants as well. The whole thing is completely ridiculous. The country's breaking down around us, and they think we're going to go and fight for it. I think we all of us have to say, get lost. Speak to you later.
Yeah, get lost. It'd be the nicest way you could say that. I'm just going to reiterate it. We should be running guns. We should be running guns to European patriots in every one of their countries. If we can overthrow Bashar al-Assad, we can't overthrow Keir Starmer. Come on, give me a break. There are people out there that really do need freedom delivered. They're begging for it.
If you ask Grok, or if you ask a sports nutritionist, or if you ask the nutritionists on the Olympic teams, they will tell you that creatine is absolutely a must. TheAlexShowStore.com already has the very best creatine you can get on the market. Now we're introducing this, and I am extremely excited. Let me introduce you to this bad boy that comes in two delicious flavors. That is the recommended daily allowance of the highest quality type of creatine. Right there, concentrated, the very best. We get it from the top lab in the country, the highest rating. 5 milligrams of this a day. Most people think creatine is just about better muscle, healthier, more stamina. It's been proven, it's been documented. I'll show you what Grok had to say about it here in just a moment. But the first thing you need to understand is that it's not just making your muscles better or your body be able to do more exercise, it's doing all these incredible things for your brain and everything else. And that's really more and more what scientists are saying people should focus on with creatine. And just since I've been taking creatine for the last few months, it has had dramatic effects on my clarity, my focus, my energy, especially when used with ultramethylene blue. Again, everybody knows about muscle and performance, or most people do, but what are the other benefits? Grok says secondary emerging benefits, improves anaerobic capacity and power output, may increase glycogen storage in muscles when combined with carbs. Potential brain benefits, improves cognitive performance under sleep deprivation or mental fatigue. Possible neuroprotective effects being studied in traumatic brain injury, Parkinson's, depression, etc. May benefit vegetarians and others who have a lower level of creatine in their diet. Who benefits the most? Older adults, strength and power, people with low dietary creatine. It goes on and on. Bottom line, if you're not taking creatine, you're crazy, and we've got the best.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.